Over the weekend, our new Twitter boss, Elon Musk, tweeted some stock-picking advice. He said, buy stocks in several companies that make products and services you believe in. Only sell if you think their products and services are trending worse. Don't panic when the market does, and this will serve you well in the long term. Well, if you think that sounds like something Warren Buffett might say, you're right. Those two clearly, they don't agree on the value of cryptocurrencies, but Elon's stock strategy is pretty close to what Warren Buffett has been saying for years. Don't panic when the market does sounds a lot like Buffett famously saying, be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy. And Elon and Warren, they both say to buy companies that you believe in. A decade ago, Buffett said that one of the best ways to protect yourself against inflation is to own part of a wonderful business. By the way, Warren Buffett is on a huge buying spree, the biggest buying spree in a decade right now. He is going even bigger into companies like Chevron and Activision and Apple. All in, last quarter, he bought more than $40 billion of stock. So let's all think like billionaires today and try to invest like billionaires too. Today on Dumb Money, we are picking recession-proof stocks that can beat inflation. We are Dumb Money.
Three friends who turned $30,000 into $30 million using nothing more than Twitter and a zero commission trading account.
The suits that work on Wall Street, they call those people the smart money. That's not us.
Our goal is to help level the playing field for everyday investors.
We are Dumb Money.
Hey there, Dave here, along with Chris and Jordan. We are Dumb Money. Welcome to Dumb Money Live. Now is the time to smash the like button, or like the smash button, either way. Subscribe if you're not already. Drop a comment in the live chat. Do everything you possibly can to get this video noticed by the almighty YouTube algorithm. Chris, Jordan, I don't know if you guys caught the Warren Buffett show this weekend, but his comments on Bitcoin basically dominated my Twitter feed, but I think what he said about stock investments, far more insightful. Jordan, I know you're in HP. He bought $4 billion of HP stock. Are you still
not
in
it because Chris guilted me out of it. Gosh,
it's
the worst sale.
That's the only sale
that I regret of all of last year.
Well, wait, I guilted you out of what?
I kind of think of the three of us as the Jordan's probably on the Warren Buffett scale more than anyone. But for Elon and Warren to have similar things. Yeah, he's talking
Jordan,
about
what did I guilt-
HP stock, Hewlett-Packard, which Warren Buffett is buying a lot more of right now.
You were making fun of me for owning HP, and I'm like, you know what? You're smart. You're probably right. I'm probably an idiot for holding on to it, but I was an idiot selling.
Right. I mean, is HP killing it right now? Yeah. Is HP really killing it right now? I don't understand that. Well, I mean,
yeah, they're higher than us.
It's just something that Warren sees as potentially a good hedge for inflation, which is what we're talking about today. Recession-proof stocks, inflation-proof stocks. Basically, we are living through and seeing firsthand inflation that we haven't seen in like 40 years. So not in any of our lifetimes. But pretty much everyone says a recession is coming. So we need to figure out what to do with our portfolios.
Yeah, I don't know that HP, by the way, is such an inflation. I know why he's saying it inflation proof, but I don't think it's the best way to think about an inflation proof.
And he didn't necessarily say it's an inflation hedge, but it's just one of the he's buying. He bought $40 billion worth of new stocks, 40B, and as a part of that, $4 billion went to HP, and he's buying Apple. He bought a lot more Chevron, which I think Jordan's also big on oil and gas stocks.
Ooh, I sold all my Exxon. So I am not. So I think oil prices are going to come down.
You can't say that Warren Buffett is buying. The one thing that Warren Buffett said that I think a lot of people don't understand is he doesn't buy very much at all. He has a team of people that make decisions. Most of the stocks that they're buying, he doesn't even know that they're buying. He has no input on them. So it's just like the Berkshire Hathaway company right now is not Warren Buffett. He has his say on a few things, but a lot of the stuff has nothing to do with Warren Buffett, which is in most cases maybe a good thing because, listen, Warren Buffett has not been the greatest investor over the past 15 years. He looks really good in times like now, and he has huge strategic advantages as an investor, but he has completely been late and missed the boat on modern innovation, which is the most important thing as an investor. And he admitted, I mean, I love Warren Buffett because he admits where he's where he underperforms. And I think he would even tell you that, he was not, he was not in a position to see a lot of the world's innovations the last 20, 25 years, and he missed out on some of the biggest runs. And for what, decade and a half, he underperformed the stock market in general, which is like just pitiful for the world's greatest investor. But he'll tell you that. Like, I'm not making fun of him. Like he'll say that. So we shouldn't put him on this huge pedestal as if
he just has strengths, right? And his strengths, he's a deep value investor, right? And so we know what he can do well, and tech is none of them.
Yeah, I mean, also, Jordan, he was around at a time where he had the ability to strategically, he had a strategic advantage over other investors because of what he had access to for many, many years and decades. And the great, some of the greatest Warren Buffett returns that make his portfolio look outstanding over a long period of time, back when he was outperforming the market, were literally just a very small handful of companies, right, that he had picked, that he stuck with for a long time, that over a generation, their single returns from this very small handful of companies made him look like a genius. And by the way, I always say, you don't have to pick winning stocks every day. If you're able to do one or two or three things right over a 20-year period, that's all it really takes to outperform the market. And that's what he did.
And right now, he happens to, this is a year-to-date chart we're looking at, he happens to be outperforming this terrible market that we've been in. And so all eyes are shifting back to Warren. But, you know, over the past year, also outperforming after the past 5 years, for most of that, he's outperformed.
Yeah, but I mean, he has a certain investment style that does well in these environments, because when the market's crushing it, he underperforms, you know? So it's like, you have to pick, what are you looking for? For him, you know, maybe this is okay. But, you know, Jordan, you told me a long time ago, when we were talking about Berkshire Hathaway, and I was like, I couldn't put a penny in Berkshire Hathaway. Like, I just think it's a complete waste of my financial resources to have money sitting with, you know, that team. In today, maybe 50 years ago, they had huge informational edges, right?
No, I think so. We talked about this. The only I think the only downside to investing in Berkshire Hathaway is you've got a huge risk if Charlie or Warren die, right? I mean, I think that's going to the stock will take a hit when that happens, for sure.
Even
though they're not the ones pulling the triggers, like
they're not.
It probably doesn't even matter to the business, but it will be a huge hit to the stock.
Yeah,
honestly,
and I think
some of the stuff that has come
pave the way for that. When you have a 91-year-old namesake, name's not Berkshire Hathaway, but when you have a 91-year-old dude who is basically the face of the fund, you make serious plans to have a succession plan, and that's why he's not the day-to-day stock picker, which I think it will have less effect. But
I think it's the fine investment. I think you could find worse places to put money than in Berkshire Hathaway.
I agree.
If the strategy is you can find worse places, then there's a lot of great places to put your money. But like that's a terrible way to think about the precious dollars that we all have to invest in the market.
I don't disagree,
worse places,
but you do get a very talented management team there that their mind is on return for their shareholders. You don't have to worry about it.
I disagree.
You can just offset. It's basically like buying the SPY. Right, you just buy it and not, you know, don't worry about it. You could do that.
Then buy SPY and save yourself some expenses of paying that management team. And he would, you know, Warren tells you the same thing. He's just like, just go buy. But he would tell you it's probably better to buy SPY than Berkshire Hathaway, quite honestly, because they don't have that talent. I don't know why we think their team is talented.
He's been saying that for years. He's been saying that the S&P index is what most people should just buy, dollar cost average into, just do that consistently over time. Time, and you're going
buy
to beat the market.
Yeah.
Their team has proven to not be talented. Okay, I'm just saying they've proven, because they have strategic advantages because of their access. They have access that few other people have. They have the ability to make moves and set up financial structure around some of their investments that are so advantageous to what the common person can do over the past 20 years, even with that power, because they have an enormous amount of power to get into deals that we could never get into, especially when times were bad back in 2008, 2009. Even with all of that, they still underperform the market. That shows you how little talent their team has. Like, but then again, you could say they're investing a lot of money, and that's hard to do at that scale. And I could appreciate that. I'm just saying, like, they have, they're at a huge disadvantage in that the amount of money they have to invest makes their job really, really difficult, right? They just can't maneuver in and out of things quick. Anyway, this is not about a rant on Berkshire. It's just not what it's about, but it really gets me going, guys, because people have this thing of what they think of Berkshire Hathaway and Warren Buffett, and I've read his books. Believe me, I'd studied Warren Buffett for decades. I love the guy. I think he's awesome, but it's just not what people think. Okay, so getting back to this, do you know what I think is the best way, before we talk about any stocks, the best way to think about investing through inflation? You have to find growth. You have to find companies that are innovating, man. Like, that's the way you bust through inflation, right? Like, you find companies that are innovating and have the ability to expand their growth through an inflationary period, and I think you're going to do fine. By the way, we're not financial advisors. We didn't say it, guys. This is kind of our thoughts on inflationary investments. We don't understand your risk tolerance. Please don't mimic this for your own accounts. It's just our thoughts.
I disagree with that. I think that a blanket statement that innovation is going to be what you want to be in inflation, that to me, unless you have pricing power on that innovation, I don't see that as working out. And I will point to Ark K compared to Warren B.
Let's talk about the innovation going on at Teladoc, Chris.
Okay, first of all, okay, when you say, Jordan, that has nothing, I don't know the innovation going on at Teladoc. What I'm saying is you have to be investing in companies that are innovating and expanding their growth and revenue growth through an inflationary period. If you do that, for me, that is the best way. And listen, it's kind of like this. It's kind of like there's never a bad time to invest in a great company. That means when you're investing in companies that are expanding their growth, rapidly expanding their growth, it doesn't matter whether you're investing in an inflationary time, during a recessionary time. And that's why a lot of our investments are in early stage companies, because it's not going to impact them. If you're growing your revenues at 400% a year, right? Inflation's not going to impact you very much. Inflation impacts companies generally that are large, generally that need to continue to borrow money, right? Because they're now having to borrow money at higher rates, right? Companies that have less of a growth trajectory through that inflationary period. That's just a fact. Guys, this is a fact. This is not, I'm not making this up. This is like a thesis of mine. This is a widely accepted fact. I'm just sharing it for people that don't understand this about investing in inflationary periods. I think 99 out of 100 people, even the people that I, you know, don't always agree with on finding alpha in investments on Wall Street, will tell you that's just the way it's always been. So I think if we look at our portfolios and you could find companies that are differentiating themselves and continuing to find ways to innovate in the marketplace and find new areas of growth that are not currently seen in their stocks today, meaning they're going to grow in ways that are not currently priced in to their company stock today, that will and should beat out any negatives of inflation, right? Like that, that's just I think that's a proper mindset for investing in during inflationary.
So I want to hear your picks. Which stocks are you looking at that are going to outperform inflation?
Well, I do, someone's saying it right now, I do a really interesting inflationary bet. And by the way, I want to talk about this company because earnings are today. I don't know. I'm really on the fence right now on this earnings report for Airbnb. But Airbnb is the company I want to talk about because, you know, there's something interesting that Airbnb has that other companies don't have, which is, I think, in an inflationary environment. And if we add on top of that a potential recession, which I don't think we're getting right now, but we could maybe get in the next 12 to 18 months, if that actually materializes, Airbnb's number one growth driver, because remember, I'm looking for companies that can expand their growth driver is actually in their ability to bring on additional inventory because they don't pay for inventory, right? So it's a really weird company that they don't have to pay for their own inventory, right? They don't have to go out and advertise or pay for their own inventory, but when they need to get more hosts, right? So what is a scenario where Airbnb could massively expand the number of hosts and the volume of inventory on the platform, therefore naturally just giving them more revenue, that would be an inflationary environment and or a recessionary environment where people are looking to both monetize assets that they own. Maybe they choose to stay there less because they need to monetize it if they're in a situation where it's a recessionary environment for them, might not be a recessionary environment for somebody else, right? Because a recession today looks very different than a recession looked 20, 30 years ago, right? Because sometimes we see parts of the economy in recession and other parts are not in recession. So we could see a massive influx of new hosts that are looking to generate cash flow in a recession. Also, in this inflationary environment, we could have a lot of people that are looking to take advantage of that, right? We're seeing rising rates in how much people can get for their Airbnbs right now. And people might have a job that pays them $80,000 a year or $120,000 a year. Well, their employer, just because we're in an inflationary environment, not everybody gets wage increases to match inflation as quickly as it's going up right now, right? So a lot of people are saying, hey, I wish I was getting more money to make up for this inflation, but I'm not. But you know what is going up? The amount of money I can get for that Airbnb property I own, or the amount of money we can get for our back house, or the amount of money we can get for our whole house when we go on our two or three vacations a year. I normally don't like doing that because I don't like people staying in my bed or my house or whatever. But shoot, the rates are up 50%. So maybe I will do it. I think that is super interesting, unique to Airbnb. It's just like a unique benefit that I'm not sure the market really gives them credit for in this type of environment. Now, it's separate from like this earnings call that we're going to get today. So I'm not saying this is going to come to play, but it's something that I think is a really nice thing for Airbnb in this inflationary, recessionary environment.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought of Airbnb as an inflation hedge in itself, but I kind of get your argument and don't have a problem with it.
They have billions in cash too. Remember, they have billions in cash, right? So that also means that Airbnb doesn't necessarily, in the very near term future at least, need to go out and raise massive capital at these inflationary rates too. So that's kind of another angle where Airbnb could.
Hopefully they're putting that cash in something that itself has an inflation hedge component, because any company with a lot of cash right now is losing money on the cash.
Yes, and I don't know what they're using their cash on. I didn't look into that. But Dave, Airbnb makes a percentage of revenue, right? And so if we're in an inflationary environment and all of those places are going up, up, up in terms of what they're charging, Airbnb simply makes their 18%, whatever it is, right? They just simply make their cut of that, right? So they're literally winning. The inflation is working to their advantage. Like, they're moving up rapidly in real time with inflation. And what I think is so interesting is that so many companies that are in the product business have these huge gaps, right? Of what they're having to pay for product to get it shipped, to get it moved, to get it manufactured. And they can't turn that knob of what they're charging up quick enough. So they have this painful period when they don't want to like really disrupt their distributor and their retailer relationships and their customer relationships. So they're in a quandary. Airbnb, it's instantaneous, right? It's literally real time. They get the benefit from the inflation.
Yeah.
I like them for that.
That's so basically, I went through my portfolio and said, with everything in my holdings, is this going to be good in the inflation and recession times? Is this going to be helped or hurt by a recession and or inflation? And the ones that were going to be hurt, I sold out of, and I did that a while back. So, I'm today just kind of double checking to make sure everything that I'm holding, my top holdings, I like Apple. And Tesla, Airbnb is one of my top holdings. There are things that I'm concerned about, like Coinbase, but they're up today, by the way, a little bit. I agree with you on Airbnb.
Yeah, I think by the way, like, you know, Tesla is just, you know, I think that for various reasons, some of these other companies like Coinbase and Tesla are just, you have to think about them differently. They're just risk assets, right?
Yes.
Because there's a lot of questions as to what's going to happen with this space or that space. I don't know. Like, I feel like this is an environment where we want to have more, maybe sometimes more visibility than we get out of some of those companies. So those companies tend to be more volatile. And you know what I've kind of said the last few months in this environment, we want to do less, trade less, just be less active, less active in the market, and whatever it takes so that you can sleep at night. For me, it's been hedging like 50%.
Yeah.
Jordan, yeah, so you got any different thought
on all of this? So I think inflation is starting to, and so I think sometime in the next few months, the Fed will realize this. And, you know, given that we're probably going to go into a recession, I don't think they can be as aggressive with rate cuts or with rate increases as they have been talking and what the market really expects, which is like 10 and a quarter rate hikes over the next 9 months, 10 months by the end of the year.
Yep.
So my bet is to actually buy bonds. And so I think you've seen the bonds kind of price in as bad of a case of rate hikes as they possibly can. You've got the 30-year and the 10-year yesterday kind of peaked over 3%. And so I think sometime soon you can take a stab at some of these bond funds like TLT and play the
Jordan, play
the
can you explain for I mean I know but can you explain for people watching why that makes sense? Like, a lot of people have never bought a bond or even understand the concept of,
right? So basically what's going on is, so you know, there's a, so bond, the price and the yield are inversely correlated to where yields go up, price goes down, and that's what's been happening. So the Fed comes out and starts talking a big game of raising rates, and bonds are down a ton, right? I mean, just like in the past, in the past 3 weeks, I think the TLT's down like 14-15%. And this is kind of unprecedented. You've never really seen bonds move this fast in that direction. And at some point, it has to end, right?
What is that ticker?
Given the worst case scenario for what they're going to do for raising rates. So at some point, people are going to stop selling bonds, right? And there's going to be a bond demand as the rates start to come back down.
Now, what was the symbol that you quoted?
So Jordan. TLT is the 20 plus.
It's the most liquid bond.
Here we go.
Spell it out for me.
TLT.
TLT, okay. The iShares 20 plus year treasury bond ETF.
And so that's what I'm looking at. I've got a small position in it yet. Could it keep dropping? Yeah, no. It could keep dropping. I mean, this is not, I feel like this is something you kind of have to watch every day if you're going to do something like this. But I think there's opportunity.
Bonds are too boring for my risk tolerance.
It's not boring, babe.
You're on drugs, basically, because bonds have been, except for the past like 6 months, have been in the biggest bull market ever. Like the past, it's like been a 15 to 20 year bull market.
Have stocks in the past, except for the past 6 months.
Totally. Yeah.
So I mean, if I'm gonna be in a bond, you know what I'd rather do is just not invest ever again. That just sounds boring to me. I just can't do it.
But Dave, no, so did you see that?
I don't think I'm old enough. I feel like I'm not old enough to
hold up to maturity. Like, that's boring. But watching, you know, these bond funds cruise up and down.
Yeah. Okay. That's not boring.
This looks boring to me. This stock, I mean, this ETF.
You could have lost a ton of money in TLT over the past 6 months.
I mean, holding a bond through its maturity and just getting, you know, getting the rate, that's boring. But Jordan here, which is kind of wild. I can't believe he's talking about
shorting bonds over the past 6 months. You could have made a ton of money, more money than you could have made shorting the SPY.
Well, where's show Dave that inverse one, which is the what's the inverse of that? Someone quoted it here on TBT, all right, which is the pro shares TBT. Ultra short. Dave, this is more your style. The ultra short.
Okay, yeah. If we're gonna start leveraging our ETF, okay, but okay, I have too many things on my chart here to really see anything. I've overlaid the QQQ on top of it just to.
So
see how
Jordan's basically talking about arbitraging what he feels is going to be government, right? Government moves, right? Like politics.
Basically, like, yeah. So what you're kind of banking on, you know, either for investors to call the Fed's bluff and say you're not going to raise that high, or for the Fed to actually come out and say, you know what, we're gonna try this 50 basis point, but we see things recovering, so we don't know if we're going to go to the full 2.5. We're going to stop at 2. We're going to stop at 1.5. But this is stuff that's going to unravel over the next, I would say, 3 months, that we'll have some better clarity into that. And so between now and then is when you've got to try to figure out what you think they're going to do.
I can see that.
It's a valid strategy. I don't know if I'll, you know, I don't know if it's something I'm going to pursue.
And so basically what you're banking on the Fed looking at a recession, right? Because if they start to see a big recession looming, then they have to cut rates, right? Or they have to effectively cut rates by not raising them. In which case, the bond market has to respond. And so that's
playing that game.
That's like trying
to predict the future, right?
But that's what we're doing right now. We're talking about what to do in a recession, and this is what you.
But the thing is, like, okay, correct. Jordan's correct. Jordan's saying that this is his thesis. To invest if you believe that a recession is coming, right? Like that's it. It's valid. I don't think a recession is not here yet, right? It's not here yet,
but it definitely
could. And we have to be thinking about this stuff. And if we start to see signs, if people watching this show start to see signs in their own life that they think are not being properly seen by the market or recognized by the market of a recession coming, because it's funny how we can sometimes see things ourselves before the market is willing to admit up to, because they're waiting on reports that are, you know, data that's coming that are weeks old. Sometimes just in our jobs, in our life, through our social networks, we can see signs of a recession. And if you do, we want to show you some ways that you might want to think about, at least, right? Some things to explore. I think it's valid.
If they raise rates, TLT goes down. So look, so you've got to realize that right now, TLT is sitting at like over, like right around 3% yield, and the Fed funds rate is like a quarter percent. So what happens is that actually these funds front run the Fed, and so they're ahead of where the Fed is. And so what they're doing by, you know, increasing the rate, decreasing the price, and so Chip Schuyler just said it's forward looking, right? And so basically it's anticipating what the Fed has already said that they're going to do. And so their 50 bip increase tomorrow shouldn't have really any effect on the TLT, because it's already priced in that they're going to be raising rates all year. And that's the reason that it's up at 3%.
Can I reply to Mike Anderson? He says, predict the future. That's all you guys do. I want to be very clear, Mike. I never attempt to actually predict the future. I think it's more important for us to accurately understand the present, what's actually happening right now. I think people think that you need to be able to predict the future to do well in public markets as a trader or as an investor, and you really don't. Just being able to see what's happening right this second puts you miles ahead of the market, because the market usually doesn't get to see what's happening right now for many, many weeks or sometimes months down the road. So just having an honest look at what's happening this second, whether there's a cultural shift or a shift in consumer behavior that's already started to happen, but hasn't yet shown up in the number. It hasn't yet shown up in the, it hasn't yet shown up on any company reports, but it has shown up on the street. You're able to see it, right? You're seeing it in your social media feed. That's what social arb investing is all about, being able to quickly detect change that's happening now, not necessarily trying to predict something in the future, which is extremely risky. The reason why we have shows like this is because even if a recession isn't happening today, we want to be mentally prepared that if we do start to see those signs of recession, that you already have run the scenario analysis of what would do well and what wouldn't do well. And you already have a plan in your mind that I am going to buy these stocks and I'm going to sell these stocks the second I see something happening, shifting, so that I'm not having to do that work later. You've already kind of done the homework and you're mentally prepared. Right, you have a prepared mind. You've run the scenarios, and you're going to move a little bit quicker than everyone else. Right, that's all. So,
but I do want to say something about Airbnb. I think it's great, and I mean, you're getting a 5% discount today, basically because Hilton came out with some warnings this morning that tanked not only Airbnb but Booking.com. They're down what, 5%, and then Expedia got taken to the woodshed. At like, it was down 15% at one point today, even though they had okay earnings and good outlook.
So what, you know what I think is really interesting, Jordan, when
I think those are good trades. I mean, just we're coming up on the summer post pandemic. I think people are traveling. I think, you know, those numbers are already starting to come out that people are booking.
Well, you know, something that I started to see, Jordan, this is interesting because I know that you're kind of an old school VRBO guy.
That's why I like Expedia. I haven't bought it yet.
So I have to read to see how VRBO did. I noticed something fascinating in my data. It looked like I started to see a spread the last 12 months, particularly the last 3 to 6 months, between Airbnb and VRBO, where they were starting to spread, and VRBO appears to be traffic, and not losing traffic, but just like compared to Airbnb, like all my data is starting to spread. And, you know, I want to ask you as a VRBO guy, do you think like, are people starting to slowly like come on board Airbnb to the point where we used to kind of check VRBO and Airbnb, and now people are just like all the VRBO old school boomers, now that you're a boomer, but like the VRBO boomers are finally getting on the Airbnb train? And that, so if someone looks at VRBO traffic.
I don't know. I feel like people are going to look in both places still.
They won't look in both places still. I'm just saying even a 10% shift makes a big difference, because like people, if people are assuming that VRBO and Airbnb move exactly the same as each other, I think that's not necessarily a correct assumption anymore. I think VRBO could have a quarter to where they're up, you know, this much, and Airbnb might be up this much percentage wise, because I think they're actually taking some market share from VRBO, which I don't think
you
the
could
market
be
is
right. I think they're both still growing though, right? And so it's a little bit tough to say market share when they're both in like a growth phase.
And that's why it's difficult, tough, right? Jordan, because
and
like,
I, you know, I don't know. I could be wrong on this. I don't think you can, I think either way you try to play this Airbnb, I'm warming up to Airbnb, especially these prices, but I could see it go. I could see both of them doing just fine in this environment.
So I do want to talk about Airbnb earnings today. So Airbnb last quarter, their revenue was up 74 to 78%. I saw sightings of both, and I haven't had a chance to actually check the source data to see which is correct. So Q1, their revenue is expected to be up 64.5%. So this is year over year data. So that would kind of tell us that, you know, relative to last quarter, they're going to do a little bit worse year over year. Still showing tremendous growth, obviously, from last year, but a little bit worse. That kind of lines up. I mean, I think my data shows last quarter and this quarter being very similar in terms of like a year over year move. So I think there's probably some upside to that, at least for my data sources. Now, one of the concerns for Airbnb is that urban traffic is up. And if urban, and the company has come out and said this, as urban traffic continues to grow, meaning people are now going back to cities since they're comfortable with the pandemic, the COVID situation, those margins, the Airbnb margins, I guess, in cities is smaller for some reason. Or maybe it's, I don't know if it's margins or just kind of the revenue rate for in cities is lower than it is outside of those urban areas. So that it negatively impacts margins. Basically, the more that urban traffic goes up, that's actually a net negative for Airbnb in terms of margins. Now, the other concern for Airbnb, valid or not, and I think we're going to start to see whether this stuff is correct during earnings calls like today and next quarter, is that Airbnb is going to lose some of these lifestyle renters that have been like you know, people like Dave that just, well, Dave doesn't count because he doesn't work. He doesn't have a real job. But like people that decide that they're going to go work in Colorado for a month or two, right? Because they don't have to be in an office. So why not? And maybe they'll Airbnb their normal house and then use that money to go Airbnb someone else's house in a state that they want to go visit or a cool place. So the question is, you know, the market keeps talking about them losing that, but are they? Because I know some people are starting to go back to work right now, but I think a lot of people are not. Like, I think a lot of people are not going back to the office right now still. And you could see this war taking place where some employers are trying to get people to come back to work. But ultimately, they're not. In fact, I was at dinner. How many episodes am I going to say I was at dinner with a guy this week? But I was at dinner with some people this week.
You do a lot
and
of dinners.
One of them worked for, just actually took a new job with an insurance company in Florida. And I said, well, are you moving to Florida? And he's like, no, actually, they just chose to close down all of their offices. And instead, they are going to have a conference center where the home office used to be in Florida. Just so people can go, like, hang out there. And I was like, I really think, guys, I don't know how much of this is happening, but I have a funny feeling, I've been saying this for a while, that we will permanently lose, I don't know whether it's 10, 15, or 20%, maybe higher, who knows, of the kind of traditional workspace. And that could benefit Airbnb for a very long time. I don't think the market appreciates that. Because think about this, we're now going to layer. We're going to layer the vacation traffic on top of these lifestyle Airbnbers. Because everyone was expecting the lifestyle Airbnbers to have to go back to work. Some of them are. But I think most are not having to. And they've gotten really accustomed. Dave, do you get addicted to this lifestyle of being able to, like, because you do this.
Oh,
going
for sure.
To spend the month?
For sure. And I can tell you that I'm going to be taking a road trip in the big van. And, you know, I don't sleep in the big van for more than two nights in a row. So I have hotels booked along the way. And I was just checking my schedule to see what I've booked, Airbnb versus hotels. And here's what I found. And I don't know if this holds true for other people. But for me, when I'm traveling somewhere for a shorter period of time, I've booked hotels. Because of the convenience and consistency, you know what you're going to get. You know there's going to be someone to check in. But for the longer periods, if I'm going to plan to be somewhere for a week or longer, I've been booking Airbnbs just because you get a different experience. You get to be a part of a community. You get to be like more embedded in the place that you're traveling to. And I think that if you take that a little bit further with the work from home and work from wherever lifestyle, the longer-term bookings with Airbnb, which, by the way, have a built-in discount when you stay 30 days at most places, that just motivates you to do that. Where when I'm on Hilton.com or Bonvoy, I don't see a 30-day discount. You can't get a lower rate. If you book a hotel for longer, you get a lower rate. But it's kind of just built into the mentality of Airbnb from the very beginning. And that's how I've booked. And I think that you're right about the trend of it. It's not everybody. Not everybody who got to work from home during the pandemic is not going back to work. But there are a lot of people who are now in a new world where their corporate job has realized you don't need to be in the office every day. We were just as effective, if not more so, with everyone working remotely. And a lot of them are becoming more lax on that. And I think it was it Airbnb that I just saw announced that all of their workforce is now going to be able to work remotely? It was a big company. I'm pretty sure it's Airbnb.
Well, it doesn't count if it's Airbnb because they're incentivized to make a big splashy announcement about that. I mean, of course they want everybody working remote forever, right? Like that's amazing for Airbnb. I just think it's an underappreciated permanent shift in work culture that is not going to ever change, the same way that casual attire is a shift that did not happen overnight. It happened over decades. Mm-hmm. And there are still companies that you have to suit up. But for the most part, it's a shift that we're never going back on. And I'm pretty good confidence based on what I'm seeing right now that the same thing will happen here with remote work. By the way, guys, I think also to... what else on Airbnb? Oh, so Pedro, one of our mods, basically said here that his rates, I think, are the highest they've ever been. I think it was Pedro this quarter at his Airbnbs, and wants to know if we would start our position before earnings today. I do think we have to be careful with Airbnb because it is a company that is valued richly, valued kind of like a tech company in some ways, right? And those companies have been punished severely for anything negative. So there, if you kind of look at Airbnb and you try to look for negatives, if there's even an inkling of anything negative, and one of the negative things that could be there, we don't know, is having to shut down Russia and the Ukraine entirely. Now, I thought they were kind of pulling out of Russia anyway, but the Ukraine and Russia, whatever revenue they do have there, would have gone to zero. And also any surrounding countries related, you know, around Russia and Ukraine likely saw a pretty dramatic decrease in business. That does worry me some. I've been looking for the number, and I'm having a hard time finding like what Airbnb's revenue number is for that, like that, just that slice, that area. I think it is clear that Europe is rebounding with travel quicker than here in the US all of a sudden, right? Like they're having a big rebound. So I think Airbnb will do really well generally in Europe, but that little patch hurt them enough to be the surprise that kind of that no one should care about. But because we're looking for a reason to punish any company for any reason in this market,
I think that particular reason will have been priced in. I think that if there is an unexpected just drop in new signups or drop in host, I don't even know that they are going to report at that granular of a level, but those
they
are the things
report,
that they seem to be most punished on.
Yeah, I think they do. I'll say this. I'm not going to come out and say like Airbnb is like a high conviction trade for me this quarter or anything, but I do kind of like the risk reward enough that like if I look at my portfolio, you know, I own Airbnb, obviously, but we both love Airbnb, yep. But I don't own a lot of it at all. Honestly, it's one of those stocks that I had to sell off when I was trying to be smart about it. Now, how is Airbnb up all of a sudden? I thought they were down. But...
No, it's down 5% right now. It's 144. Yeah,
So Ameritrade, I hate like the cash on Ameritrade on my app. It's so inaccurate.
So here's a 5-day chart of Airbnb, and I put the other big hotel stocks on there too, and you can see that they all took a hit today as we're moving towards that earnings line. But I actually sold some
options,
Airbnb.
Dave, I was going to say I might get some calls. I would consider getting some calls.
I sold some of my Airbnb at. You can see where I sold on that chart. I don't know how I timed the market that well. That's bizarre. I sometimes mark where I get in and out of things just so I can visually see. This might be an opportunity for me to buy some more Airbnb, just to hold it long term.
Or you can get options ahead of
earnings would be the time for me to do it. Or yeah, you're right. I could get options, or I could.
I bought options, Dave. I just bought 30 contracts for $22,000. Just we'll see. I'm not doing anything crazy right now. But for me, oh sorry, yes, 30 contracts, $23,000. I bought the May 6th, 145 calls. I don't have a lot of conviction in that. I don't have a ton of conviction in that trade. But I do want to have a little bit more exposure to Airbnb than I have right now because it's just too in my portfolio.
Yeah, I think mine is too because I did sell a bunch of shares.
But I was selling everything off. And I always knew that I didn't want the market risk in Airbnb between up until earnings. And I'm so happy that I sold out of Airbnb going into earnings because look at what happened. The market risk today even smacked them down, right? With their competitors getting hurt. So who knows? I mean, listen, everybody's hating on travel today. So I would not be surprised if Airbnb gets
smacked. I think that's one of the best places to, maybe not the best place to be, but I think it's a good place to be right now.
I agree. Jordan, I need to read into some of those earning reports.
Yeah.
You said, what was the main concern that came out today?
Well, I didn't read it. I read a headline that said that basically Expedia was up until the Hilton call, and then it tanked. And so
what was going on with Hilton?
The comments were. It's something that I've been meaning to go back and look at.
Do you have any idea what happened over at Hilton?
No, I don't. But what's weird is that Hilton's not down that far.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a guidance issue. So,
but I thought Expedia had a good guide. So that was the weird thing. I thought Expedia was fine. I didn't see. I mean, I could be wrong. and I didn't listen to the call, but I didn't see anything that looked nuts.
I'm not seeing anything obvious in the Hilton report right here. But at the same time, guys, listen, it's not like the concept that travel is hot is a secret that only we have access to. So it could just be a matter of the market. Listen, oh, come on, guys. Hilton's at like an all-time high. That's why it got smacked down today. And this is the concern. Everybody knows travel is hot, but the market is super weak, and these travel stocks hadn't gotten their beat down. So anything less than truly spectacular, they're going to get slapped. And that, it looks like that's what happened to Hilton today. I mean, pull that 2-year chart on Hilton, guys. Pull the 5-year on. Look at that 2-year. I mean, in this market, even after that 6-point move down by Hilton, Hilton's still looking pretty good. So that's the risk going into Airbnb earnings today. The risk is people are assuming, I bet you the whisper number is probably higher than the aggregation of analyst estimates over the past few weeks on Airbnb. And that sets up a potential problem unless they really come in and not only outperform for the quarter, but also really surprise us to the upside when it comes to guidance.
So I'm looking at headlines on Expedia, and I don't see anything crazy. The craziest thing that I see is that the one of the Flavor Saver guys on CNBC said that their earnings were horrible, but I don't see anybody else saying that. So
I also don't think Hilton is like a great measure of the style of travel that we have that's roaring back right now. This is part of the reason why I was a little, I mean, Hilton's done really well, obviously, running into a quarter in terms of stock price. But if someone mentioned Playa, and yes, I mean, listen, Playa Resorts has been one of my favorite picks. My biggest concern with Playa Resorts is it's a really small company. They have like, what, 14, 15, 16 beachfront resorts, but it's all leisure. It's all inclusive. And 100% of the company is in Mexico, Jamaica, and Dominican Republic. And I think they are going to be beautifully positioned to capture increased demand in terms of elasticity of demand being very high, meaning that people are willing to pay out, you know, people are willing to pay up to get that hotel room that they want. They're willing to pay up for vacations right now. As long as airfares don't kill us with fuel prices, which is always a concern, I think Playa will be in a really good place as a pure play on oceanfront resorts in those three countries. I still have a lot of Playa. I have a ton of Playa. Just add a little bit more Airbnb today. I told you guys I like Booking.com. And you're saying they got crushed today, Jordan, but their earnings are tomorrow.
No, Expedia got crushed today.
Oh, Expedia. Okay. But you said Booking.com's down as well.
Yeah, Booking.com's, but that's why the whole sector's down, basically.
Yeah. So Booking.com, I would imagine, is better positioned than anyone else for like the next 3 to 5 months in terms of European traffic popping, European travel. I mean, listen, they're like 50% plus of their revenue is Europe, which is insane. So, you know, if you want to play European travel, Booking.com is it. By the way, there is a longer term trend on Airbnb, Dave, that's kind of interesting. I don't know if you've seen it because you spend a lot of time on their app. Mm-hmm. So they have been getting more into hotel bookings on their site. I guess they have boutique hotel rooms that list on their site. And the concept is that booking providers like Booking.com and Expedia take a huge, pretty big chunk of revenue in addition to advertising, right, from these hospitality providers. And Airbnb might ultimately become a more efficient way for hospitality providers to market their properties, people, because Airbnb is looking at that business like, well, that's just kind of like an ancillary freebie for us, right? So if we can like get in on that business, how cool would that be? And let's not forget that business is monstrously large. And what Airbnb has that a lot of these other travel providers like Booking.com and Expedia don't have, insane organic traffic. So most of the traffic that Expedia gets and Travelocity and Booking.com, Trips.com, most of their traffic is actually paid for. So they're actually buying that on Google. So they're taking a huge part of their revenue and they're paying fees to Google so that when someone types in, I want to go to a hotel in Jamaica, they actually end up on one of Booking.com's websites. And then Booking.com makes a huge amount of money from the hotel, but takes the majority of that money and pays it to Google, right? So how interesting of a business model that Airbnb is so differentiated. People, it's its own thing. People just go to Airbnb, but then if you don't find the house you're looking for, the room, maybe you also look at hotels, and it's like you're already in the app, your credit card. I haven't booked a hotel room date. Have you ever booked a hotel room through Airbnb?
I've not booked a hotel through Airbnb, and I think it's just because I haven't seen that many listings. It's not, it hasn't been that prominent, at least in the places where I've been searching. Or I knew I was going to get a hotel, and I didn't start there.
What a game changer that would be for that.
I don't know how people actually book hotels anymore, because I just use Bonvoy.
I just use Google and search for hotels using Google built-in travel. Same. That's where I start with flights, too. Google has just become the everything for me.
So Jordan, you're using Bonvoy, as do I, for a lot of like my go-to cities.
And I think a lot of people do that, right? So like anybody that's got any corporate points or anything like that, they're either locked into Hilton or they're locked into Marriott, you know, or they've got their platform, they want the points.
Listen, we're frugal and we're points oriented, right? And we want to utilize our points, but that market hasn't really like changed. There will always be a segment of the market that always does that. There's a huge segment of the market that doesn't. And also anytime you go to a place that doesn't have a lot of their hotels, or maybe you want something a bit more interesting, you're probably going to do a dual search and do
Bonvoy. And obviously that doesn't work for if you want to go rent a house. And if you want to rent a house, you're looking at HomeAway VRBO or you're looking at Airbnb. But I thought Bonvoy was trying to get into that as well.
Well, yeah, they all kind of have tried to get in that market, but it's so bad, dude. It's so bad. I actually looked at what they were doing in that space. I was just like, you know what? Like, people, you can't put a price on just frictionless experience. And you want to go to the, this is a winner takes all market. I truly believe it is. And I truly think that VRBO is going to be around forever probably, but I think they'll slowly, that business will slowly erode into Airbnb, because you just want to go to one place that has the most properties, that the UI experience is the best, and Airbnb, it just happens to be that place, right?
Yeah, and so, I don't know. I mean, I kind of agree with that, and I kind of think that all these places that want to rent their house are mildly shady anyways, and they want to get you one time on the app, and they want to like book you, you know, on the back end and not have you go through the app because they make a lot more money. I think they're price conscious. So I think it's going to be a competition on who has better rates for these guys.
I can't imagine the rates coming way down, because at the end of the day, Jordan, you have to be really large to attract hosts. VRBO can do it. They're big enough, right? VRBO can do it. Obviously, Airbnb does it. So like VRBO is not going to want to give away any margin, not even 1 point. There's no way that Expedia is like, let's get into a price war with Airbnb. Like, they know that's not going to help them much if they're like, but we're cheaper than Airbnb, right? Like, that's not, that would be like a death spiral. They're just thinking corporate. They want to make every penny they can off the business they get. And to the day that company dies, if it ever does, VRBO, they're going to believe that they can figure out new ways to attract customers, because they have huge corporate teams. You know how it works. Like, if one corporate team doesn't do it, they'll bring in another marketing department. Like, they'll just do that for the next 20 years. Just like Yahoo probably thought, Dave, you remember how many new teams came into Yahoo thinking, no, we're going to save this. We'll partner with AT&T, and AT&T has like 190 million or 300 million customers, and they're going to
we're
going to
switch from being a search engine to a broadband provider. No, we're now going to be a media company. Oh, no, we're now going to be a, it was a lot of that.
Guys, what do you think about Uber? Someone just brought up Uber, Lyft.
Lyft reports tonight, don't they?
Yeah, so Lyft is interesting, because it's like, you know, it's your pure play, right? And we all know that is another, so that it's interesting. So we're talking about companies that would do well in inflationary periods and recessionary periods. Is Lyft another one that gets to instantaneously adjust their pricing, right? Based on what they can get away with,
Yeah.
Right? And so
maybe, I don't know. The problem is, I think that they've got a cap on how much it can charge, and then people just start looking for other options.
Yeah, okay, what are your other options? If you are needing to get a ride somewhere, it's Uber or Lyft.
Well, no, sometimes it's out of convenience, right? And so you're like, oh, well, maybe I'll have some drinks, and so I'll take a Lyft. But if it's too expensive, you're like, I'll just have
I'll risk it.
I don't have to worry about it.
So, Jordan, how about this? How about this? Is it a company like Airbnb that as inflation happens and the amount of money that people can get up, even though there's a cap on it, where people, if we head into a recession to where people are looking ways to supplement their income, do they get more drivers, right? Do they get more drivers?
Yeah, maybe they get more drivers. I think it's always going to do well in like, you know, especially coming into vacation season in those destinations, right? So, you know, Lyft is going to kill it, you know, around Florida and California and places like that. But, you know, I think it's more price sensitive when you make it into, you know, like New York City. And
also, you know, if you attract more drivers, you're actually lowering your revenue because the more drivers lowers their ability to mark up the prices based on availability.
Don't they make the same profit no matter what, right? The drivers
They get a percentage.
Yeah, they're not taking a flat fee per ride. They're taking a percentage.
But they'll get more volume, right, with lower prices. So I don't know.
I don't know either of those.
We'll see what their earnings look like because they still don't make any money is the problem.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
So if you're looking for like high-quality companies that make money, I mean, they have good technology, but they don't make money.
This is a risk-off environment, right? It's a risk-off environment where the market is really looking to punish those companies when they don't deliver, right? Because like the second they don't deliver, and by the way, it's a little bit of a problem with Airbnb because of the perception, right or wrong, that Airbnb is way overvalued, and that Airbnb, listen, and they are valued really highly, and that Airbnb is kind of one of these, you know, high mover stocks from the past two, three years. They also, by the way, guys, Airbnb was a little bit of a pandemic stock. And you know how people love to hate those. Like, if you look at all the other pandemic stocks, they got murdered. And there's something psychological there, don't you think, about, well.
Yeah, it's psychological, but at the same point, like, you know, we know that discretionary stocks are getting hammered. But at the same time, like, the only place discretionary to really be right now is travel, right? Like, that's the right discretionary place to be.
I saw Pedro commented, people consume more alcohol during a recession. Is there a play there? I pulled up, we've seen TAP has been going
you know, my
up pretty
issue,
good in the
yeah,
last
and listen, I have
months.
A really small position, guys, in TAP, which is crazy because it's the largest position I've ever had in my entire life. If you go back, I don't know, a year and a half ago, I wish I would have kept that full position with how strong it came back. But there are some concerns, I think, with TAP that are just something that you need that keep you up at night, which is the cost, right? These cost drivers of employment and getting people, the shipping prices and the fuel prices of getting trucks around the world, shipping this beer all over the place. Like, it's
commodity prices, right? I mean,
commodity prices, like,
because you got to realize that, like, when you talk about, you know, some of the products that they make that are like the highest volume beers that you possibly make, that those things are very sensitive to input costs.
Yeah, so you're right, Jordan. Like, by the way, that's not saying that TAP is a bad investment, because TAP is benefiting, as I've always said. TAP is Molson Coors is positioned so beautifully to benefit from the reopening. And we all know the reopening is certainly happening now. Like, it took forever for concerts to start to ramp back up. It took forever for sports to, like, fully really ramp back up, and music festivals and weddings and all that stuff, right, guys? And by the way, Europe was completely closed down so much longer than we were closed down here, but now Europe is starting to ramp up. So, like, Molson Coors is just positioned so beautifully for that reopening trade. So you have to balance, like, where's the risk and what does the market care about? If they come out and revenue exceeds expectations because of the reopening, but costs exceed what the market assumed costs would be because of all these concerns with commodity price and, you know, the cost of labor and supply chain, getting aluminum for cans, right? Like, what does the market care about? And this is my big issue as a social arb trader right now. It's so hard to assess what these investors, what the market cares about most right now. It's really difficult. You have to be careful. I can't I can't like over lever into any trade right now because I think I know what I'm doing, and then like one thing happens and like that's what the market cares.
Well, Airbnb's up like $7 or $8 after hours, so.
All right, dude.
All right.
So I probably at least broke even on those options that I paid $6. Those options were basically like at the money, and I think I paid like $6 to $7 each. So if it goes up $6 to $7, I should have some premium value left for at least the rest of the week. So let's hope Airbnb sticks. Well, that's good.
There
Look
we go.
Right here, man.
Still
we did
on the
it.
Rise.
We
still
did
on
it.
The rise.
All right. Still, let's do it. Let's do it. I wish I would have invested more. I wish I would have said
exciting.
I didn't have high conviction.
I didn't even realize, you know, we did the show later today than usual. I didn't realize that it was
I thought it was 11 a.m., Dave. Like, Jordan just said that. I was like, what are you talking about, dude?
Yeah, so it looks like your classic beat and raise. So, yeah.
So Airbnb. All right. The estimate for revenue was $1.45 billion. They came in at $1.51, so they beat nicely there. Let's see if I can get some more stats.
How great is that, man? Like, I was not expecting that to happen on the show. How much would it have sucked if it was the opposite? Like, we're here, like, talking how excited we are about Airbnb, and it's just...
You're talking about Airbnb and they just get smoked by 10 points or something?
Yeah. So their expected earnings per share, they were expecting to lose 28 cents. They only lost 3 cents. So,
and by the way, that's hard to assess anyway, Dave.
Non-profitable company.
How about the revenue? How much is
top line
revenue?
They beat. It was 1.51 where 1.45 was expected.
Okay. They raised the second quarter. Guidance of like
what's the revenue year over year though year over year is it, how much is it up year did they say
I haven't like, found I that was... yet it looks like options were expecting a plus or minus 9.1% move
I think I just doubled my money guys I think I bet you I doubled my came close to doubling my money I probably made about maybe 25k on that options trade so I'll take it in a market that has been pretty crushing for all of us. And by all of us, I think pretty much every single person that watches this, including us, I will take every little thing that I can get. Guys, I don't want to talk about, I know people are asking about ApeCoin. I don't want to go into NFTs on this episode other than say that I'm deep, deep, deep into this kind of my thesis on ApeCoin right now. I just started buying more. I sold all my ApeCoin at a gigantic $500,000 profit. On Friday and Saturday, so my ApeCoin trade worked beautifully.
So you sold going into the other side. Mint.
I sold 95% of my ApeCoin that I bought at like I don't know $12-13. I sold it probably at an average cost of 21 and change. I almost doubled my money on a $500,000 trade. It worked beautifully, and now I am starting to buy ApeCoin based on a dual thesis that I have. That is, I think, going to play out over the coming weeks, but I don't want to reveal it on today's show because people are going to hate me talking about NFTs today, and I want to do a standalone show for that. Maybe this week. Can we do one this week, Dave? Like, I don't know. Later this week on this?
Maybe.
Comment if
you want to see an NFT episode on this channel or if you just want to hear it on Chris's own channel.
Twitter space. I'll do a Twitter space like I did last week on ApeCoin. We'll do a follow-up on it, okay, guys? We'll do a Twitter space. By the way, Dave, Jordan, you didn't know this, but we did a really cool Discord voice chat on Saturday night. It lasted for like 2 hours. Leon texted me right during the whole like other side NFT land deal. He's like, can you just hop on? I hopped on and it was awesome. We had a bunch of community members in there. And that's why you guys got to join Discord. Dumbmoney.com/Discord. We do this stuff sporadically. Also, Twitter Spaces, Dumb Money TV. We are going to run Twitter Spaces. We're going to try to run it once a week. We were supposed to do it today, and we didn't. My fault. My bad. We'll try to get that going maybe later this week. But please follow our Twitter, my Twitter. I'll always retweet it. Dave and Jordan will as well. All that's on dumbmoney.tv, right? Dumbmoney.tv has all of our Twitter handles, right? Everything?
Dumbmoney.tv, yes.
Yeah, has everything.
Has everything.
So,
So Airbnb is saying that they see Q2 revenue as they raised it from $2.03 billion to $2.13 billion. Oh, that's the range. I'm sorry. The
no. So the estimate was 1.97, and then the range now, is 203 to 213.
So the guys, Q2 range is above the estimate. The Q1 gross booking value was estimated to be $15.9 billion, and they came in with $17.2 billion. And the nights and experiences booked, which is that new feature, we were estimate of $98 million, and they got $102 million from the
Dave,
new
I am
nights
more
and
excited.
Experiences.
I'm more excited making 25K on an Airbnb options trade on earnings, because it gets right back to social art, than I was about making $500,000 off of ApeCoin, because I feel like we just gotten beaten down so bad in this equities market. Any little win that we can just chip away and start to make some of our money back.
Well, for you, that worked out because you played options during the show. Basically, Airbnb is back to where it opened this morning. It's not like it's had this amazing run. It was down 8% during the day, and it's popped 8% after hours. But I would love to see that momentum shift change and get Airbnb back up to...
Dave, you know what, Dave? You know what? I feel that this market is going to be really cautious allowing with how much they're willing to push a stock up like Airbnb even on great earnings. And I know a lot of times the market has faded this stuff, but because we had a thesis and we got through this earnings, I'm going to add some Airbnb stock right now after hours too, even at this level. And who knows, I might regret it. I won't regret it because this is a long-term holding for me, but I'm going to add another 100K of Airbnb stock right now, because I think that this earnings call is probably going to be pretty sweet. And I think people are just not accustomed to really buying up on earnings, because every stock gets crushed. And if they don't get crushed, they come down the next day, right? So it's like, and I don't care if Airbnb comes back down the next day at this point. I don't care. Like the thesis is intact.
And it's a stock for the long term. Yeah.
I want to be in something where risk is off the table, and I just got all this new information. Risk is off the table. We have a strong thesis on Airbnb. We know they're probably going to benefit, I think, from an inflationary and a recessionary theoretical environment. Maybe less in a recessionary environment. Maybe people travel less. They get there. So,
well, I think we've got full employment, right? So as long as people are employed, they're still going to take their vacations. They're still going to want to go do things. I think it's a good trade.
I'm up on the day now. My account is up on the day. Yes, I love this. You know how rare that is these days?
Up on it the is day. Rare these days.
And by the way, the reason why I was down on the day is because I have this huge hedge. I have and my hedge was down because the market, you know, was generally a day. Even though, and my Amazon was down. So.
Yeah, without a hedge, slow. I am up on the day.
Oh, by the way, me up on the day
by 0.26%. I am up 0.26% today.
But I just realized, Dave, my options aren't included in that because they haven't traded yet. They'll trade tomorrow. So I'm up on the day with this options morning. All right. Sorry, guys. It's been so downbeat for so long when it comes to equities. I like seeing things.
I'm trying to see when the earnings call is going to be for Airbnb. Here are the results. It looks like they're going to have their call at 5:30 Eastern. So in about an hour and 15 minutes from now, I'll be listening in on that. Anything else you guys want to add?
No, I have not looked at lumber stocks. So I've asked that in a while, so I can't comment. I'm just passing through comments, making sure that I hate when we don't reply to people.
But when your account is in all cash, you can't lose.
You can lose. You can lose.
You're guaranteed to lose the inflation rate.
But when you're losing double that in stocks going down, it's fun.
Okay, I want to talk about our next episode that I want to do, Dave, because I really want to do this episode, and this is the one you're going to be really excited about. If we have time to do it this week, I'd love to do it this week. This is a double to triple leverage ETF that we found the study on. We talked about it a little. We teased it during our last episode, and we said we'd try doing it this week, and I still want to get it done. I think this is going to be a really fun one. It's kind of like, I don't know, I'm fascinated by this. I know Dave is fascinated by it. And if there's ever a time to do it, if there was ever a time to do it on the QQQ, I feel like this is the end. I don't know. I might do it, Dave, but I want to have a debate before I place this trade. So, you know, hit the notifications bell so you don't miss this episode. Give us a thumbs up before you leave, please, guys. I'm going to do it myself here. Triple leverage ETF. Everyone says, don't do it, don't do it. It's a disaster long term. But the study that I read shows that it might not be. And I'm going to try to poke holes in it. So
I hope you can put your money in there for like a day or two at a time. Isn't that what they say in prospectus?
I think you're supposed to use it to try to hedge against other things, right? You're supposed to.
Nope.
And that's where they say if you're doing that, it's you're going to have slippage because it resets itself daily. And so if you're trying to mathematically have a triple leverage, it's not technically truly that. But what this article is saying is that over time,
don't give it away,
you're going to have to subscribe, tune in, and watch. That's what they say. You have to subscribe to this channel to find out all about it. Very interesting article.
We'll talk all about it. Tomorrow, Thursday, or Friday.
Yes, one of those times. Maybe all three.